Welcome to Women Leading the Way radio show, where each time you'll hear from successful women CEOs, executives, and professionals, where we'll discover how they do what they do to be successful in business. We'll be interviewing women who have overcome big challenges, women who have incredible stories of lessons learned in dealing with adversity. We'll even interview women who have started and grown successful organizations, and women who are C-level executives with unique talents and positions. Our goal is to bring successful businesswomen together to share how they're leading the way in business today.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Women Lead Radio, brought to you by Connected Women of Influence. My name is Eileen Gaffin, and I am your host for Reputation and Influence. And our topic today is about leadership and influence at work. And our leading lady, our guest, is Marti Stanley. She has a company called Dynamic Dialogue, and we're going to learn more about that. So good afternoon, Marti.
Hey, Eileen. How are you?
I'm good. You have such an accomplished background, and I want you to tell our listeners more about it, but I just want to introduce you, first of all, by saying that you are the author of 3 books. And the most recent one, and we're going to be talking a lot about this, is From Type A to Type T, How to Be a Transformational Leader in a Bottom Line World. And you're also a certified speaking professional, a facilitator, and an executive coach. And that's a lot. Tell us about your background and, you know, what led you to do the work that you do today.
Sure. So I came out of a corporate background. I have experience in 3 really different environments. I basically cut my teeth in a little company in Green Bay, Wisconsin that had about 250 people when I started. It was small group health insurance. And basically when I was there, I started every human resource function for the company. We had 250 when I started, and when I left, we had 1,700 people, and we'd become a nationwide billion-dollar company. And that company was sold about 3 times while I was there, and it's now part of Humana, and they do all of the group health insurance for Humana. So I had a great opportunity to work with entrepreneurs and learn from people who really revolutionized their industry. The guys who created the company, nobody was specializing in that market, and the guys who founded the company were real entrepreneurs and pretty much renegades. So I got to be kind of an internal entrepreneur and start up every function, which included creating one of the top 25 corporate wellness programs in the country. Back in the day when nobody was really talking about wellness, we started doing ergonomics training in 1985, which was pretty revolutionary. But
yeah.
Then I left. Yeah, it really was. And I left there and went to Kansas City and was hired by Blue Cross Blue Shield because while I worked for the other company, we stole a lot of market share from the Blues across the country. So the Kansas City Blue Cross said, hey, you know something we don't know. And I said, yeah, I do. We knew a lot about customer service. We revolutionized technology. We revolutionized service. And we also revolutionized a lot of things in the human resource field. So they hired me, and I was the VP of human resources for them to help them adapt to a changing marketplace because they were pretty traditional. So my role there was to help them break some of the patterns of a traditional company and start being a little bit more forward thinking and not rely on the old ways of doing things. And then I left there and I said, you know, I've had enough of insurance. I want to work in a fun industry. And it turned out that I was offered the position of Vice President of Human Resources for AMC Entertainment, movie theaters. And I will tell you, Eileen, in case you weren't aware, that movies are way more fun than insurance.
So, who would have known?
Yeah, really. I had a chance there also to work with the founder of AMC, who is a guy named Stan Durwood. And Stan was also a revolutionary. He revolutionized the way we see movies. If you think of any innovation in the how you see a movie, Stan came up with that idea. He created the first multiplex, and they hired me when we changed the portfolio from multiplexes, which had 6 or 8 or 10 screens, to megaplexes, which are the theaters that we see now with, you know, 18, 20, 24 screens, 30 screens with stadium seating. So while I was there, we had to revamp our whole portfolio of how we hired, trained, and compensated people. And again, I got to work with a master entrepreneur and learn from the best. And after Stan passed away, we went through a big restructuring, and then I started my own business, which was just almost 20 years ago now.
Yeah, that's so what I'm hearing from you over the course of your journey before you started your own business, you worked with renegades, you worked with traditional leaders, you worked with revolutionary and entrepreneurial leaders. So you you've got a taste of every type of leadership style. And, you know, is that what led to you thinking about writing about the different types of leadership and ultimately writing about transformational leadership?
Yes, that was part of it. I think probably the biggest catalyst to start was that having been in the head of HR, it was always falling on my shoulders to implement the next big thing. Now we're going to have more highly effective leaders. We're going to be better communicators. We're going to do 7 habits of whatever. And I got so tired of these flavor of the month leadership or communication programs, and because it just seemed to me that we spent a lot of money as an organization and a lot of time, and usually about 18 months afterwards, the senior leadership team would say, well, this isn't working, and we're going to try something else. And you would usually end up with 3 ring binders that sat on the shelf. And
yeah, I
bet
there
really
are a lot of, excuse me, I bet there are a lot of listeners right now who have been the recipients of that training and are shaking their heads right now, you know, that they've participated in the flavor of the month training and
Exactly. In fact, when I moved to San Diego, I finally got rid of some of my binders from back in the late 80s and 90s. You know, I kept thinking someday I might use this. But I embarked on creating a process where people wouldn't have to remember 7 habits or 6 steps or 5 keys, which is the foundational concepts that I use with every organization, whether we're doing training or working on a strategic plan or in executive coaching. The foundational concepts are at the very heart of it, which are, I won't go into all of them now, but it's a foundation of accountability and aligning your thoughts and words and actions for the results that you want to achieve. So that's been the foundation of all the work I've done for the last 20 years. But one of the things that I noticed, and, you know, I was one of the first women in business back in the late 70s and early 80s, you know, and we were, you know, there weren't many of us around there. And then, you know, I was the first VP of HR at AMC and the only woman officer. So I've been around a lot of the traditional styles of management, which were mostly male-dominated. So I've taken a look at this, and there's a lot of things. I've done a lot of research and studies on power and power and influence. And one of the things that they say that I have found is that real power starts when there is a blending of the masculine and feminine energies. Like there are 6 stages of power, which I describe in the book From Type A to Type T, How to Be a Transformational Leader in a Bottom Line World. And what I describe in there is like stage 3 is a typical stage of power where men are, which is symbolized by the status, by the corner office, you know, the command and control, being the expert, you know, and we've all been there. You can't leapfrog a stage, but in the women, many times, you know, we might have been a little bit timid when we started. We might have had a mentor who we relied on, and then we came into our own and we adopted many of that stage 3 styles of leadership. But real leaders emerge at starting at stage four, which is where there is the blending of the masculine energies, which are more analytical, logical, that type of approach, which comes, you know, really naturally for men, and most men stay there. But women bring so much more to the workplace. We bring a sense of empowerment. We bring a sense of inclusion. We bring a sense of collaboration that comes more naturally for a lot of women. And when that's what the type T or transformational leadership is all about, is about blending that analytical and logical and statistical side of management with the more what they call soft skills, which I kind of think that's a silly term for it, because there's really nothing soft about being inclusionary or empowering. So that's kind of the basis of moving forward. And plus, there's so many compelling reasons now why men and women need to be demonstrating that, primarily due to demographic changes.
Mm-hmm. Do you see women stepping into that and doing things well?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's across the board, and a lot of times it's based on the industry and whether there are other women who are in the organization. Like one of my close friends, and they've also been a client of mine, is a woman who was just promoted to be the CEO of a large engineering firm with about 5,000 people. And she really does an amazing job of having that nice balance of the analytical decision-making capacity, but there is a very strong inclusionary factor, empowering factor, and you can see that in the way that she's leading her team. And she's got a real diverse team of men and women and different ethnicities, and you can see that really being demonstrated in her leadership skills.
What do you think is holding some women back then from embracing all of that?
That's a great question. It could be maybe the environment that they're in. When you're in an all-male environment, many times it's hard for, particularly, and I don't mean to be negative about older white men, but sometimes, you know, they grow up in a very traditional style of management, which was about command and control. And they don't oftentimes see the value or the benefit of having empowered employees and really nurturing people to use their skills and abilities and providing training. So some of it could be the environment they're in. Some women, you know, and again, they might be a little bit gun-shy to really speak up and let their skills be known. I think that as the millennials who are real, they're going to be turning 40 next year, which that kind of takes my breath away when I say that.
Yeah, so they've been in the workforce for almost 20 years. Yeah.
Exactly. And then from an HR perspective, 40 is still a protected age group. So our millennials are now going to be in a protected age group, which I find kind of funny. But anyway, the millennials, the Gen Zs, and then the newest generation that's going to be entering the workforce are people who were born after 2010. So they're going to be 10 years old. It won't be long before they're in the workforce. That's the alpha generation. But the Gen Zs are different than the millennials, and there is a high expectation for being included, having a mentor, somebody who's going to coach and develop, and they also want to contribute. And I think that women who really embrace their inner nature to nurture will do very well with the demographics, because by 2025, 75% of the workforce will be born after 1980.
And then, is that what we refer to as emotional intelligence that would, you know, do well for men and women to be using that in the workplace?
You know, I'm not a student of emotional intelligence in all the specifics of it. I think that that's a component of it. I think that that's something that can contribute to helping people where it doesn't come naturally. You know, I think people who have more of a scientific background or an engineering background, men and women, they oftentimes don't have that same level of nurturing or natural inclination to empower people. So an emotional intelligence training could be something of value there.
In your book, you talk about the role of or the power of listening, active listening, and you also speak about intuition. Can you tell us more about that and how that relates to leadership and whether those are good traits or, you know, about communication?
Yeah. Listening is, it's so underrated. It's unbelievable. And I think if anybody wants to really succeed as a leader, the first thing that they can do is really to start listening. Listening without judgment. Listening for what's really being said, not just the words that are being used, but what is the emotion behind the thought. And this is where when you're really listening, you can't make assumptions and you need to be asking for clarification. I think that listening from a point of inquiry and curiosity is a skill that is one that I think every great leader that I've known has the ability to listen through inquiry and through curiosity, wanting to learn more. What does that mean? How could it make a difference? And just asking lots of questions. And plus, when a person is really listening, there is true engagement, which also builds trust with the person that they're speaking to. So not only are you going to have more information and get better results, but you're building a relationship of trust and respect when you're really listening to the content without judgment. So I think that's, I'm geeky about people learning to listen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we're listening to you right now and learning. And how do you think that that helps with your reputation in the workplace as well? You know, when we talk about reputation and influence, to become an influencer, you always think, especially online, that it's the person doing the talking, the writing, that perhaps they might be missing that engagement piece, that listening piece.
Absolutely. When you're listening, you're building a sense of, or you're going to be able to work more towards collaboration. I guess when you're listening and engaging, there's the collaboration, and that's where the power is. If you want to be influencing people, whether you supervise people or manage people or not, your capacity to influence is so broad, whether it's with your colleagues or your vendors or your suppliers, or, you know, it could be your spouse or your kids, you know. And if you're really listening from a standpoint of collaboration with the intention of collaboration, you're going to get a totally different result. And oftentimes, and this is one of those intuitive things you asked about intuition, I recommend to people, when I work with leaders, we develop what we call their five key words. And this process is described in type A to type T. And we develop their five key words so that when they get into a sticky situation, one where they're uncomfortable, or if they know that they have a natural tendency to be a little bit snarky or, you know, a little bit crass, or maybe they withdraw, depending what a natural tendency is. They have their five keywords of who they really want to be as a leader. And the one that I often say, if you haven't spent the time in thinking that out, being collaborative is probably one of the best go-to words to have. And the way it works, and it works very intuitively, you can, on the fly, you can be in a situation where maybe you're getting really uncomfortable, or you're feeling pressured, or you're feeling like you're not being heard. And all you have to do is think to yourself, what would I be saying or doing if I was being collaborative right now? You just have to think that. Seriously. And as soon as you think it, I guarantee you, Eileen, that the words that come out of your mouth next will be totally different than what you normally would have said.
That is such great advice. That is such great advice. And so let's take it from there. And without naming companies or individuals, can you give us examples of the good, the bad, and the ugly, or one of those of, you know, of what you've seen in the workplace today of, you know, leaders or their teams, what they're doing well and what they're, you know, not doing well?
Oh, gosh, yes. Well, I can give you some great examples. I have some amazing clients, and I've worked with, as you know, I've worked with people in so many different industries, whether it's for-profit, not-for-profit, associations. You know, I've worked with public works guys, you know, the guys who are cleaning our city sewers and repairing our streetlights, all the way to doctors and lawyers and, you know, CEOs. So what I've found are the people who really take the time to be reflective on who they want to be as a leader will get much different results. Now, on the, I'll give a tough example first, where I've worked with an organization, it's a whole organization where the leadership team had been led by a CEO for over 30 years, who was very command and control. Nobody did anything without his permission. You didn't ask questions, you just did as you were told. And so there was no creativity, there was no empowerment, there was also no accountability. And so the new CEO came in about 6 years ago, and he brought me in. I've been working with them for the last 5 years, and we've been working on a major corporate culture project. But the hard part is you've got leadership, people in what's referred to as a leadership position who have never been accountable or have had to think through anything, because they've always been told what to do. They might be a VP of sales or finance or HR, but there's no accountability there. Everything falls into a black hole. So shifting that culture around has been a pretty major initiative. And it's been a real struggle for everybody, because it's like, why do we have to change? So that would be one example. But I've also worked with, on the flip side, I've also worked with managers who, back to the woman I mentioned, who is the CEO of this large engineering firm. I'm just winding up a project with them where I've been coaching 13 of their mid-level executives. And I've never seen a group of people who are so accountable. They've been, and their whole goal is, how can we make this, how can we make our CEO successful? We will do everything to make sure she's successful. We want to give everything because we love this company so much. We want to strive to be the best. And I'll tell you what, I'm working with those two companies, which were at opposite ends of the spectrum. It, you know, it kind of made my head spin at times.
Exactly. That is the flip side of the first organization you told us about.
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, so with the first case that you described, is that a case of needing new leadership if at the top or,
yes.
You know, and then, I mean, maybe a whole new leadership team, because people are just so dug into their many, many decades of doing business the same way.
Yes. And we've been working, I've been working with the CEO on that. And we've gone through, we did a lot of training. This has been going on I've worked with them for 4 years doing different training, coaching, facilitation with the leadership team to help bring them along. But the rest is up to them, really. So and I think the CEO, he's under 50, he's probably about 47, and he is an amazing man, and I think he really had hoped for a long time that there would be the desire for his team to step up, but it just hasn't happened. So we ended up offering an early retirement program, which many people, I think probably it's a small company, they've got under 200 employees, but several people took that. We also, some of the people in key positions, like head of HR, head of finance, they're stepping into different roles, and new people are going to be brought in. And I've been coaching a person who's a mid-level exec there, and she, I find her amazing. She said, you know, I don't think that I have the skills that are needed to take my position to the next level, because I've worked my whole life here.
That's
but I think
self-awareness.
I can make a difference.
Yeah.
Very. And she said, I think I can make a difference in this other department. So she, and she had the flexibility to do it, but she took a step back in title and in pay to make a difference in another department. And then she can grow from there with very self-aware.
Mm-hmm.
She'll be great.
We are coming to the end of our interview, and I just want to know if you have any, you've shared so many nuggets and pieces of advice with us about, you know, collaborative thinking and blending masculine and female energy. But is there one more nugget you want to share with us before we wrap things up?
Oh, gosh. There's so many things. Like, I am so passionate about the work that I do. And you and I have talked about, I'm in this program, a year-long program on what's our commitment to the world. And my commitment to the world is that people and organizations live their dreams. Because when people are able to use their skills and abilities and make a contribution, they're happier, they're healthier, and they're more productive. When organizations are structured, when organizations are structured and hire the people who want to contribute to their vision, and there's a blending of individual talent with corporate or organizational vision, it's so dynamic. And not only does the organization thrive, but the people in it thrive, the community thrives, the community is healthier, the families are healthier, and it makes for a better world.
Well, thank you for contributing to to make it a better world. We all appreciate that. And if our listeners want to reach you after the show, how would you like them to contact you?
Well, I would love to hear from you. And you can go to my website, which is alteringoutcomes.com, alteringoutcomes.com. My email is on there. My phone number is on there. That might be the easiest way. You can find me on LinkedIn. It's Marty, M-A-R-T-Y, Stanley, S-T-A-N-L-E-Y, on LinkedIn. Hey, I would love to connect with your people, because we want to make this a better world, and I think women are the ones who are going to make it happen.
Yes, I agree with you, and we will definitely be in the forefront of leadership, and we are, many of us are today. And if anyone would like to buy your book From Type A to Type T, where do they find that?
I'd say the best place, go to my website. There's a tab right on my website for the book.
Well, thank you, Marty. Marty Stanley, for being our guest today. And that is our show for today. Thank you, Marty, for being our leading lady. And a special thanks to all our listeners here in the United States and around the world. Yes, we are an international show. And we're going to be back again for another Women Lead radio show Mondays at 9 and Fridays at 2 p.m. Pacific time. And it's been my sincere pleasure to be your host today. My name is Eileen Gaffin, and thank you for listening. And remember, your reputation is our business.
Women Leading the Way is produced by Connected Women of Influence, the premier private membership organization where like-focused, business-to-business executive and professional women connect, collaborate, and cultivate a vast network of high-level affiliations, resources, and professional relationships.
For more information about Connected Women of Influence, please visit our website at connectedwomenofinfluence.com.